Once upon a time, the world of book publishing was both more genteel and more glamorous. You know, gentlemanly editors tending the prose of genius authors before adjourning to their martini lunches. The writer Jonathan Galassi conjures this world so faithfully in his new novel Muse because he's actually lived it. For the last three decades, Galassi has run Farrar, Straus & Giroux, one of the prestigious publishing houses. Jonathan Galassi is a published poet himself, as well as a translator, but Muse is his first novel. John, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you, Kurt. It's great to be here.
So you have had this long, successful career, still going at 65, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, rub it in.
Why a novel, and why now?
Because I'm 65, because it was now or never.
You've said that when you were starting out in the 1970s that you became an editor because you didn't have the nerve to become a writer. What do you mean by nerve in that sense?
I think that I loved writers. I loved writing. It was always my passion. But I think in order to commit yourself to living that way, you'd have to have the nerve and the faith that you were good enough. And I think that I'm someone who everything I've done in life I've sort of backed into. And I think that this is the ultimate case of that.
Yes. No one, as I said, remotely like Ida Perkins has ever existed, as far as I know, in this country, this great, serious American poet who was also a hip-hop superstar and style icon, attending White House dinners and appearing on the cover of Rolling Stone. Is she, in this counterfactual way, your kind of wish fulfillment in the perfect world? She would exist?
Yes, absolutely. Why can't we have someone like Ida Perkins to whom we can all look up, lust after, and aspire to be close to? I think that it's a counterfactual, but it's imaginable that there could be a someone like an Ida Perkins who's a kind of rock star, who's both great and accessible,
yeah.
who has no – there's nothing that's standing between her and the reader.
Well, and in her period, in that era, in that post-war era, it could have happened.
It could have, should have.
Yeah. Your main character, Paul, is a book editor who, as a teenager working in a bookstore in small-town middle America, became obsessed with her. I'd love you to read for us the moment when he first encounters Ida Perkins' poetry.
It was Morgan who'd first put Ida Perkins' striptease into Paul's hands one November afternoon, while the rest of the Ducats tribe was watching the local Embryon College earwigs get trashed by Hobart and William Smith. "Try this on for size," she said with a wink as she turned to straighten up the children's section. How had she known? It was love at first reading. Paul had never encountered anything so daring, so insolent, so electrically present, running on all cylinders at once. He devoured all of Ida's work, starting at the beginning with Virgin Again and moving all the way to her latest collection, Arte Povera, which had provoked yet another sensation when it had come out a few years before. Her rapturous flights in the face of convention, behavioral and literary, made Perkins's poetry thrilling, but it was the mastery, the purity of tone and timbre with which she did it that induced Paul's amazement.
That's John Galassi reading from his novel Muse. In the book, you don't just allude to Perkins' greatness and quote her poetry here and there and say she's to American poetry what Proust is to the French novel. You actually then wrote an entire book of her poetry, which you've included here, a little like Nabokov in Pale Fire, I guess. But seems to me chutzpah to say, here's the greatest poet of the 20th century, and here, I've written her poetry. Was that a daunting prospect for you?
It was so much fun. And it's part of the satirical, counterfactual nature of the book. You're not supposed to believe that the author believes these are the greatest poems of the century, but they're supposed to be kind of stand-in, placeholder for something that you can imagine.
You're not supposed to believe they're the greatest poems of the century?
Well,
I bought your suggestion.
I don't think they're nothing, but you're supposed to take them with a grain of salt, like everything in the book.
You published a collection of poetry, Left-Handed, in 2012, which tells the story, your story, of a middle-aged man coming out as gay. You've said you've always used poetry to explain yourself to yourself. So in that sense, what does fiction do differently? Did it explain you to yourself, or is it another thing altogether in this instance?
I think I worked with prose, with fiction here to try to explain a world that I'd known to myself and to memorialize it to others. I think that there's a lot of deep work on myself in this book too, but it's about a milieu, it's about a way of work that at least on the surface has changed a lot. But I actually think that the core of publishing remains the same. It's the relationship between the editor and the author, which is here in the book, you see it's just the same as it ever was.
Now, let's imagine that as editor John Glossy, this book comes in, somehow gets to you over the transom, through an agent, whatever, and you see it. What would your reaction have been? Would you say, my God, I got to publish this? Can you distance yourself from authorship sufficiently to have that?
I think that that's a very tough question, by the way, very unfair question. But
thank you.
But I think that I hope that I would feel that it's a rich enough evocation of change and constancy in this particular microcosm that I would jump for it.
Yeah. And I know this is difficult, but are you better as a novelist or as a poet?
Well, I've published 3 books of poetry. I've written poetry for 30 years. And this is my maiden voyage as a prose writer. But I certainly became very enamored with the process, and I'm trying to write another novel
really?
Now. Yes.
So it's not just the one.
I hope not.
Good for you. John Glossy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kurt. It was great.
Jonathan Galassi's novel Muse is out right now.